The following program is for information purposes only. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of City News 570, its management, or Rogers Sports and Media.
You've got questions, we've got answers.
Welcome to Ask the Experts on City News 570.
Advice and tips from the people who really know.
Now, here's your host, Brock Greenhalgh.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Ask the Experts here on City News 570. I'm joined today by Dr. Muna of Advanced Pain Relief Clinic. Dr. Muna has over 25 years of experience working with patients in and around the region, so he knows what he's talking about. Welcome to the show, Dr. Muna.
Hey, thank you very much, Brock. Nice to be here with you.
And thanks for giving us some of your time today. We really appreciate it. Listeners, if you're interested in any of the information we discuss over the next hour, please reach out to Dr. Muna. You can call 519-885-3500. You can visit in person at Unit 204, 385 Fairway Road South in Kitchener, or you can check them out online, advancedpainrelief.ca. Today, we're going to spend some time discussing spinal disc problems in both the back and the neck. But before we get too deep into that discussion, your tagline: first we listen, then we heal. Doctor, where does that come from?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So that, you know, that dates right back to the days of chiropractic school. We had a brilliant physician as one of our physical diagnosis teachers. And so part of the job of physical diagnosis is, you know, it's not just checking somebody out and checking their reflexes and their neurologic tests. It's also talking to them, so you can understand what's wrong with them. And Dr. Fincher said, guys, listen, if you spend the time to talk to and listen and really listen to your patients, he says 85% of the time, they're going to tell you exactly either what's wrong, or they're going to put you on the right track so you'll figure it out, or whatever the next test should be. So 25 years later, Dr. Fincher's probably long retired, but I just would, he's not listening, he's from Oklahoma, but if he was listening, I'd like to tell him he was 100% right. You know, it's at least 85% of the time we can figure things out by getting to know our patients. And, you know, I like people, so it's easy for me to kind of get involved and learn about them. Because it's funny, sometimes you'll catch a clue as to what happened to the patient or what they need in a conversation that almost sometimes seems unrelated.
And you don't get that sense just from a questionnaire that you hand someone to fill out paperwork. You really need to delve deep into that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's a fun practice as well. You know, we really enjoy our work. Of course, people are coming to us because they are in pain or they have a problem, so that part's too bad. But the nice part is we've got a good success rate. We embrace some great technological advancements and mix it all in with some good old-fashioned doctoring, which is where the listening and the talking comes in.
Perfect. Thanks for that. If we can, if we move our focus onto the main topic of discussion for this hour, spinal disc problems in the back and the neck, what do we need to know about the spine and spinal disc, doctor?
Yeah, thank you. Everybody... I think the statistics are over 95% of people at some point in their life are going to have a problem with their spine, whether it's a degenerative disc or a herniated disc. And I'll talk about more of what those things mean and how they play into it here as we go on. Or they're going to have a joint that's dysfunctional. But what it really boils down to is our spine is a magnificent function. It's a magnificent structure. And there are 24 bones or vertebrae, as we call them in medical terminology. I think most people have heard that term. And between most of the vertebrae are discs. And these discs they have a really nice, tough outer area called the annulus fibrosus, and then a soft, jelly area called the nucleus pulposus. And a healthy disc and all these spinal segments and the ligaments holding together creates this beautiful spine that allows the nervous system to communicate. So from the brain, the spinal cord descends and comes out between each of the vertebrae. And the fact that there's space there for them to exit is a function of those nice, big, juicy discs that create the space for them. And, you know, it's a great creation. It's got lots of flexibility, lots of strength. But sometimes things go wrong as well.
I think some of us have imagined our spinal cord to be like a rope almost, running down through the disc. But I once had someone describe the spinal cord more like strands of toothpaste and much more delicate and extremely important, obviously, to protect. Does that sound like an accurate description to you, doctor?
Well, you know, toothpaste might be a little soft, but the brain is certainly the consistency of toothpaste or chocolate pudding. The spinal nerves are a little bit tougher. They're not strong by any means. You could lacerate one. You could cut one in half with not very much pressure. But there are a number of strands, and they all kind of come together so that different information is carried on the different strands. So that's why sometimes when patients or people will have a hemisection of a spinal cord, which means half the spinal cord is cut, you get some weird symptoms. You can get, you know, problems in one leg and one arm on one side, or if someone has a stroke, the pathways coming from the brain, the spinal cord, one side of the face is affected, but the other side of the body. So yeah, there's lots of pathways. It's very busy. These spinal surgeons who do a good job, you know, my hat's off to them. It's a busy highway to be negotiating that kind of traffic.
And you mentioned that idea of, you know, how the spine is just central to everything. So, you know, you might be finding, you know, you've got pain in, as you had said, you know, in another extremity, in your arm or, in, you know, at some point. But it all traces back to the spine, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Trying to think of who it was Hippocrates said, look to the spine, you know, the doctor of the future will look to the spine for healing. And that's not a chiropractic thing. It's not that, hey, my joints are out of whack, and if I get an adjustment, it's going to fix everything. It's about how important the spine is to protect the spinal cord and let the nerves flow and let the brain get information. So people say, you know, or people wonder how strong is a disc versus a bone. I get these conversations in the office.
Right.
Every year I'll have, you know, at least one or two emergency response workers or a roofer come off a roof. And if they have healthy discs, they're much more likely to fracture a vertebrae, crack a bone in their spine than they are to injure a disc. Because discs, when they're healthy, man, they are tough. They have lots of resiliency. They're squishy. They're super tough. But when they get weak, and we'll talk about the most common cause of that, they can get very weak. You know, for every one or two of those people that I get coming off a roof, I get 100 or 200 that bent over to pick up a Kleenex. They were leaning over to shave. They sneezed in bed and they ruptured a disc. So this kind of boils down to discs typically are avascular, at least the outer part. Avascular is another way of saying they don't have independent blood supply. And discs are always regenerating. In fact, the connective tissue in our whole body, the cartilage in our knees, the cartilage in our joints, the disc material on the outer part is always regenerating. But because it's avascular, it doesn't have a lot of dedicated nutrient delivery. So it relies on movement to imbibe those nutrients to help the regenerative process. Plus the movement activates that regenerative process, but then you also have to have the ability to be unloaded at night. So you're lying down, you're sleeping in your bed, and hopefully for you, the pressure's coming off those segments in your joints and your spine, and that's how it helps it to regenerate. When you get into a situation where you have chronically tight muscles or chronically bad posture, you can create tension around those spinal segments, and now all of a sudden the discs aren't moving as well, the discs aren't unloading as well, and that's where we start to see the beginning of degenerative disc disease, where the discs start to dry out and they get thinner, and they don't hold the vertebrae as far apart, so those exiting nerves can sometimes start to get pressure. That happens in your neck, you're going to feel numbness, tingling, weakness in your upper extremities. If it happens in your lower back, it could affect your sciatic nerve. I think most of us have heard of that.
Absolutely.
It can create pain down the back of your leg or weakness in your lower extremity.
And I think, too, the one thing is, for a lot of people, you know, going to see a specialist sometime, we put it off. And, you know, our arm is bothering us, our foot is bothering us, whatever it happens to be. When it's your spine, there's no way to avoid that. You know someone is in pain, and probably, you know, it's that idea of don't wait until the time when it's hurting. You know, get in and see you, and it's preventative maintenance as well, I would think.
Absolutely right. Yeah, making sure everything's symmetrical and functional is the key to living longer. Remember watching a show, you ever watch a show 60 Minutes? They were interviewing mm-hmm. Centurions, right? People who lived over 100 years. And one guy said, you know, he says, I think it's because I always looked after my spine. If something was tight or knotted, he says, I always, you know, would get on the floor and work it out. Or I did core exercises my whole life. This is before core exercises were popular. And Of course, that's not the only solution, but I think certainly it contributes because your brain is also very much an input-output device, meaning the quality of your brain output to some extent is directly related to the quality of your brain input. And the vast majority of the input is sensory input from muscles and joints, meaning how much are the joints stretching or deforming, how much are the joint muscles moving. And that's one of the reasons why exercise is so good for us. That constant bombardment of activity into your brain stimulates certain brain areas, stimulates your posture. Like posture is key to having a healthy spine. And sometimes, you know, you'll see, let's use kids, for example. Sometimes you'll see kids who have horrible postures and you tell them to sit up. And as soon as they stop thinking about it, their posture's right back bad again.
Yeah.
And then some kids just have great postures. So I think it all boils down to the central activation of the brain and spinal cord reflexes for good posture. But we can talk about that more later if you like.
That's great. We are coming up on a break here on Ask the Experts. When we come back, we're going to spend some time discussing the ins and outs of spinal curves. So stay with us here on City News 570.
You're listening to City News 570.
Time for more Ask the Experts with Brock Greenhalgh.
Welcome back to the show. Dr. Muna from Advanced Pain Relief Clinic has joined us today with a special focus on spinal disc problems. Listeners, if you're interested in any of the information we discuss, please reach out to Dr. Muna by calling him. You can call 519-885-3500. You can visit in person at Unit 204, 385 Fairway Road South. That's in Kitchener. Or check them out online at advancedpainrelief.ca. Before the break, we started discussing the spine and spinal discs, and clearly the body spends a lot of time and effort developing those spinal curves as well. How important, doctor, is it that these spinal curves to our overall health? What role do they play in our overall health?
Yeah, they're paramount, right? When we talk about good spinal curves, what we're really talking about is good posture. So when we're born, we're C-shaped, right? We come out of there, you fit very well into a hammock or into somebody's arm because your spine is C-shaped. And then as our brain starts to develop, you know, we start to do a little push-up or we start to lift our head. That starts to set the curve in our neck. And then we start to push up a little bit off the ground using our hands, kind of like a sloppy push-up. So our legs are still on the ground, but we push up with our hands. And that starts to set a curve into our back. So these curves are called lordotic curves, and they are a great indication of brain activation, of good, normal, healthy, natural development. And when you stand up and you have good curves, gravitational loads are good for you, meaning that they compress your spine. Your spine curves, if you're looking front to back, look like an S curve. So gravity causes a compressive load, makes your spine almost act like a spring. That springing action activates cartilage, increases blood flow, increases lymphatic flow, just helps the whole spine regenerate well and function better. Makes the disc very healthy, keeps good stress on the bones so they stay healthy. When we start to see breakdowns in posture, a lot of head forward posture today. I've been in practice 25 years, which sounds like a long time, but not that long, but that was pre-cell phones, right? We didn't have as much or I guess it was around this time of cell phones, we didn't have as much head forward posture as I see now. So patients will come in and their curves will actually straighten out or their curves will actually reverse because they're spending so much time on their phone, on their computer, the car's steering wheels in front of us. There's so much postural collapse that we're seeing more and more people come in with upper back pain, pinched nerves in their neck, decreased neck function. And it's all because we're doing things in our posture that are causing problems. We talked about the importance of activation of brain areas. So these changes in postures are also going to have changes in brain function or brain development over a long period of time as well. So, you know, phones are important. We have to have them, but looking after our posture is also very important. And we have to find that middle ground somewhere.
And I'm going to date myself here, but my mom passed away about 10 years ago, but I can remember as an adult. So she had been born in 1925. I remember her talking about someone's back once, and she described it as being a dressmaker's back. And what I said, well, what does that mean? And she said, well, there's this curve at the top of the spine. So as you're talking about, you know, socially or culturally, these things are developed, and depending on someone's role that they have in society, the job that they hold down, the work that they do, it does have that impact. And that's going back, you know, that's going back 75 years to hear someone or have someone bring that up. And it's like, it's not a new problem. These things have been around, but they're now being exacerbated, as you're saying, people sitting and staring at computer screens or on their phones. And we've got to reverse those steps for sure.
100% right. You got it. So have you ever heard the term, Brock, a bulging disc?
Yes.
You ever heard that term?
Yeah.
And you probably heard the term herniated disc as well?
Herniated disc as well.
Yeah. Okay. So that's common lingo that we see on spinal MRIs. So I thought I might just take a minute and explain the difference and the significance of both of those.
Perfect.
So the outer part of the disc we talked about, again, it's called the annular part, or the fancy word annulus fibrosus, is the hard outer avascular tough part of the disc. It's juicy. There's lots of fluid in it, but it's typically fairly tough. If that portion was to bulge, right, if there's too much pressure on it, if you can think that it's like the jelly in a jelly sandwich, if one side of the sandwich is too tight or pushing down, it might cause the other side to bulge a little bit.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes we think, okay, we have a bulging disc here. That's the source of the pain. Usually there are some pain receptors, but that's not usually the case. There was a study done in California. I'm thinking it's just over 20 years old, where they MRI'd like 2,000 university age attendees, students, none of which had any back pain, and 65% of them had a bulging disc.
Wow.
Right? So we can't correlate bulging discs with pain,
right. But
they tell us a story. If your disc is bulging, that means something's out of sync. There's abnormal pressure loads in your spine. They did the MRI on students, so I'm thinking it's probably too much sitting in the classroom.
Right.
Too much, you know, bending forward, reading textbooks or working on computers. And a herniated disc is where the central part, that soft jelly part in the center called the nucleus pulposus, actually finds its way through the annular part, right? So there's a rupture in the annular part and it comes and sticks out and it herniates outside that hard annular wall. Call that a disc herniation. Why that's particularly troubling is twofold. There's a lot of things that had to happen for that disc to herniate out. So there's quite a background that's taken place for it to allow it to herniate. So there's some work, some rehabilitation work that needs to be done there. But once it escapes outside that outer wall, running through the area are spinal nerves. So sometimes when we get a herniated disc, it can put pressure on the spinal nerve or the sac that runs around the spinal nerve, and it can affect if it's a herniated disc in the lower back. It can cause pain into the leg. It can cause weakness or drop foot into the leg. If it's a herniated disc in the neck, it can put pressure on one or more of the spinal nerves in the neck, and that can cause weakness or pain in the hand, arm, shoulder, anywhere north or anywhere below that, anywhere south of the where the nerve root comes out.
So if a client comes to you and they don't, you know, they're not sure, is it a herniated disc? Is it a bulging disc? Excuse me, and you do your observation, you take a look at everything, you're talking with your clients
sure.
as well. What are the things that you're looking for, and what are the things that you would be working on right away to alleviate that discomfort?
Yeah, so with a good focused examination, you can usually figure out what level is involved and to kind of to what extent. To really know if a segment's herniated versus protruded like a really bad bulge, you need some advanced imaging like an MRI. But when a patient comes into the office, checking the strength, let's use the upper extremity, for example. You know, we check different components of strength in the wrist and the hand and the arm. And if there's weakness, well, that's one clue. Okay, something's going on. Maybe it's this area. And then we check reflexes, and there might be weakness in one of the reflexes. And what a reflex is, you know, I think we've all seen that knee-jerk reaction where you tap someone below the knee and their foot kicks out.
Yeah.
So what that's testing is that's where we hit the tendon of the thigh muscle, the quad muscle, and it creates a slow stretch on the tendon, which activates the muscle. So the nerve has to get into the spine and get back out and make the muscle kick. And we know when that happens, that signal's getting in and out. So if the knee-jerk reflex is diminished, we know that area of the spine is kind of holding up traffic. Right. So we start to think maybe there's a disk issue there.
And if someone's coming to you with disk issues, how often would you need to see them? Would you like to see them? Are they coming to you once a week, twice a week, as needed? Or is there a certain a pattern that you would be following with these clients when they come to see you?
Yeah, super question again. A couple parts to that. It really depends. So we're a corrective pain relief clinic. So when we do things for patients and they get pain relief, the point is we're doing things to correct the underlying issue. So as they get better, or as we correct the issue, they get better, the pain gets reduced, and they're happy, we're happy, everybody's happy. But if someone comes in, let's say they rolled over in bed and herniated a disc, that means to say that there's something been going on long enough that made that disc so weak that finally that day it ruptured. So most patients I will send for imaging in a case like that, I'll start with a digital x-ray because it can give us a lot of good information. It can give us a history. So when someone presents with that, we might, if they have a herniated disc, we might do some therapy like laser therapy. Dr. Fred Kahn is a retired vascular surgeon who just passed away. He developed a class 3B laser and wrote an article on how laser therapy is reparative for disc herniations.
Okay.
So that requires some quick frequency, 3 a week, 4 a week, sometimes 2 to 3 times a week for several weeks. And if there's another component where the spine is compressed and the musculature is adapted because of poor posture, we might have to do some therapy to break up old adhesions in that muscle. So it's about a 6 to 8 week process most of the time, with patients attending about 3 times a week to break up the fibrous tissue, to stimulate some disc healing. We have a fabulous treatment called spinal decompression, which actually pulls the spine apart, outsmarts the receptor, so you get a really good deep pull, and that can create a vacuum force and pull a herniated disc segment back in, increase some height, and help rejuvenate a degenerative disc as well.
Good to know, and that's important information for our listeners as well, too. We are coming to the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a break, and we'll get an update from the City News 570 News Center. When we come back, we can discuss symptoms and treatment options as well. So stay with us here on City News 570.
You're listening to City News 570. Time for more of Ask the Experts.
With your host, Brock Greenhalgh.
Welcome back to the show. Dr. Muna from Advanced Pain Relief Clinic has joined us today with a special focus on spinal disc problems. Listeners, if you're interested in any of the information we discussed, please reach out to Dr. Muna by calling 519-885-3500. You can also visit in person, Unit 204, 385 Fairway Road South in Kitchener, or check them out online, advancedpainrelief.ca. Dr. Muna, let's imagine someone comes to you with an MRI showing a herniated disc, like you've been talking about already. What are the symptoms that they would probably be showing, and how would you move ahead with that treatment?
Super. So herniated disc, neck or back?
Let's start with the back, and then we'll move up to the neck.
Perfect. Okay. So if someone has a herniated disc, the lower back is also called the lumbar spine. And there's 5 lumbar vertebrae, and there's discs between each vertebrae. So when we say someone, let's say, has herniated their L4-5 disc, that's the disc between the 4th and the 5th vertebrae. So the disc can herniate in different directions, but if it herniates, they usually herniate to the back and to one side. So if it herniates back into the right, then the patient's probably going to have some pain in their butt, some pain in their back of their thigh, because that's kind of where the 4-5 nerve kind of feeds, innervates, looks after, takes information to and from.
All right.
If they had a herniated disc one segment lower, then they would probably have pain down the rest of their back of their leg and maybe into their big toe. If someone had a serious compression of the spinal cord at that level, like a big disc herniation, they might get weakness in their foot. They might have foot drop. So when they walk, their foot would slap, or they would have to lift their knee really high to create room for their, and then kind of flick their foot forward to create area to walk. Atrophy can occur, which is shrinkage of the muscle. Mm-hmm. So if the muscle's not getting enough nerve flow, the muscle will shrink. So a typical textbook presentation of a herniated disc L5-S1, so the very bottom of the lumbar spine, the S stands for sacrum, so that's the very last of the lumbar, would likely have leg pain, all the way down the back of the leg, maybe the big toe, weakness in the leg, maybe some shrinkage in the calf. If you compare the left versus the right calf, the one calf, if it's longstanding, might be a little bit smaller. And if we were to treat them, we would definitely start with some laser therapy right away. The right frequency of laser therapy is known to help repair faults in the disc wall. If there's any tissue texture changes, and I'd like to tell you a little story about a patient that'll kind of demonstrate this as well. If the tissue texture has changed, meaning the tissue's gotten harder, tissue that's denervated, doesn't have good nerve flow to it, can sometimes undergo a little fibrous degeneration and gets harder and it gets restricted. It can also be a source of pain on its own, but if it spans joints if it spans different joints, when it shortens, it compresses those joints, which can create a secondary problem as well.
So when we take a look, if we take a look at the neck, then same sort of thing. What are people going to be noticing same when thing. They come in? Okay.
Yeah, you got it right. You know, when you start looking more at the body, it's interesting to me that when we have herniated discs, typically we don't have them in the mid back, right? It's rare to see a herniation in the mid back. We only see the herniations in the evolved curves, right? The curves that we weren't born with, the ones that evolve. And again, we're back to strengthening and posture tone and good posture hygiene when you're sitting at a desk or preferably standing at a desk. That's where we tend to see the herniations occur, in those areas that we have a lot of control over.
You had mentioned back in the first section the idea of at night being able to unload, and that idea of taking all of that pressure off of the spine. Here in North America, are we doing things right when it comes to the type of bed we use, the type of pillow? What has your research told you? I'll put it to you this way. We've just changed to a full foam mattress, and I notice a difference. But again, that could be personal preference. I'm not too sure.
Sure.
You know, you look at culturally across the world, people sleep on mats, people sleep on blocks. You know, are we doing, and are we doing it right here?
You know, so generally speaking, I think we're doing it just fine here. I'm interested in sleep hygiene and mattresses. In fact, about 20 years ago, our family. My father owns a number of furniture stores. He's 86, he's still working, he's doing that, so he's doing great.
Wow.
But they asked me about 23 years ago to help design a mattress. So this is early in the days of memory foam. So okay. I designed a mattress that was a coil mattress with support, but then had a memory foam on top. And the idea was to take pressure off the joints with the memory foam, just to make sure there was enough support with the coils underneath. So good memory foam mattresses today, yeah, they take pressure off, but it really, a lot of it comes down to personal preference. I have patients who love memory foam. I have patients who hate memory foam. And I think it's a personal preference. The goal is you want to take enough pressure off the areas you sleep on. If you're a side sleeper, you want the mattress soft enough that you're not compressing those areas so your arms don't fall asleep. But you need enough support that those muscles aren't working all night to hold you up. They need to be able to let go so you can kind of fall into them and they can stretch out. And that's the unloading part that's so important.
That's, as you said, extremely important to be able to do that. Someone, you know, brand new to listening to the show or brand new to the things that Dr. Muna can do, how would someone go about getting an appointment to see you? Do they have to get a referral? And how do they get a chance to meet with you?
Okay, so first of all, no referrals are required. We're portal of entry doctor, so you can just call the office and come in. That said, we get a number of physician referrals, probably about 20 a week. But no, if you feel that you need some help with anything pain related or function related, or even if you're just looking for better health or some ideas, you can just pick up the phone or go on our website and you can book an appointment through the website. No referrals needed. Now, we have other practitioners in the office, like massage therapists and physiotherapists, who kind of round out our team. I will use them for certain aspects to get the right patient outcome. You might need a referral for them. We do custom orthotics and bracing. Sometimes you need a prescription for that as well. But we'll work with you and your doctor. We have good relationships with most of the physicians in town, to the point where we get referrals from them or we send feedback to them so they know what's going on in our office. As far as meeting me, yeah, my name's on it. So I meet everybody who comes into our clinics. I have a clinic here in Kitchener 1-0 and Sound as well. Everyone who comes in, I meet them. I help to set their treatment plans. If they're getting treatment in our office, it's at my recommendation and my supervision.
The other 10 months of the year, I work as a teacher, Dr. Muna. So here's my question.
Yeah, cool.
Clients come to you.
Yep.
Do you send them home with homework? Are there things they need to be doing when they're not in the in the office with you? What do they need to be doing the other hours of the day?
You know what? That's a good question because it lets me bring up a pet peeve that I have. We have a number of patients who come in with torn muscles, torn rotator cuffs, shoulder muscles. You've heard of rotator cuffs,
yes.
Maybe?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, so if someone tears a rotator cuff muscle, it used to be the old standard, and many physio places still do this, they start into exercises way too soon. I'm a firm believer in exercise. I work out 5 days a week anyway. I feel better when I work out. I know it's going to help me long term. But if you have a torn muscle, man, you shouldn't be doing anything. You should be relaxing that muscle, and you should be coming in and letting us do therapies that increase protein production, increase blood flow, reduce inflammation, and promote your ability to heal faster so you can get movement. Now, what that said, once the initial tear is done, then you got to work it out. So those patients, we will send them home with homework. So I think when you come to our clinic, you get less homework in the beginning. And then when you're ready for it, you'll get more homework as we go along.
That's good to know.
There's a case that kind of really gets to the point of many of the things we're talking about that I'd like to share with you, if that's okay.
Yeah, for sure.
We had a, it's got to be, we were in our current space 7 years, so it was the other, so it's got to be at least eight, nine years ago. We had a local physician come to us. He was working as a hospitalist at Grand River. And he came in one day, made an appointment just like everybody else, and said, hey, listen, I've got a herniated disc in my back. The pain is at the level where if I don't get some help, I'm quitting medicine.
Oh, boy.
He said, the pain's shooting down my leg. I don't know what to do anymore. He says, we've had some mutual patients. He said, so I'm here to see if you can help me. So I examined him. We talked about that knee-jerk reflex. We talked about strength testing. So if the strength is good and the reflex is good, chances are it's not a pinched nerve. And I explained this to them. Poor guy got really upset. He says, what are you talking about? He goes, the MRI says I have a herniated disc. What are you trying to tell me here? I've got the leg pain. I've got all that. So I explained to him. I said, I'm not doubting that you had a herniated disc. And you probably had one at the time they did the MRI. No question there. For sure. It's right there on the report. I said, but what I think's happened, I think your herniated disc is resolved, but it's left you with this leg pain. Two things. There's a part of our brain, pain is perceived in our brain. There's a part of our brain called the parietal strip where all pain is perceived. So if you, there's a representational area for your baby toe on your right foot and for your thumb on your left hand, and it's all mapped out into an area in your brain. So if you have pain firing from a part of an area for a long period of time, that part of your brain can get facilitated or it can get easier to activate. It's called an associated pain memory. We have people who have phantom pain, so they've lost the extremity. Let's say they've lost their left leg below the knee, but their foot still hurts at night. It's because they have that representational area in their brain and it's still being activated. And the other part is, as we talked about briefly, when you pinch a nerve, sometimes the tissue that was fed by that nerve will start to undergo a little degeneration.
Right.
It gets smaller, it shrinks, it gets atrophy. And for this doctor, that's exactly what had happened. His tissue texture was tighter. It didn't feel like normal, healthy muscle. Felt a little bit ropey. So I explained to him those two phenomena. And he goes, you know what? That actually makes sense.
Right.
He said, I'm here for help. He said, so you do whatever you want. So I told him I'm going to need him for about 6 weeks. We started to, so keep in mind, this has been going on for a couple of years. It's getting worse for him. He's finally at his wit's end, ready to quit medicine. We did some shockwave therapy on his back and his leg, affecting the areas of his brain that were affected, but also the tissue that had changed. He had 5 treatments 1 week apart, and he's still practicing today. He's pain-free. I got a really nice compliment from, I bumped into him and his wife. We're in Uptown Waterloo. And, you know, in a matter of 5 sessions, that's not the usual. It usually takes a lot more. But in a matter of 5 sessions, this guy, he was in enough pain that he was ready to quit medicine, was perfectly fine again. And the MRI, people sometimes see things on an MRI,
right.
Or they get something and they get tunnel vision. And that's something, and that's a dangerous thing. We had a patient in on Monday who's been having thoracic spine pain, so mid-back pain for, you know, since she was 12 years old. No one could figure it out. They've done MRIs. She definitely has some issues in the disc there. But because the MRI said there's a disc herniation in their mid-back, everyone has tunnel vision. They're stuck there. And I know from my chiropractic training, from my neurology training, there could be something else going on. So we sent her for imaging of her neck. We did a few tests. Turns out the joints in the bottom part of her neck have some degenerative change occurring. That's what's referring the pain into her mid-back. But that's not all. The alteration in the posture of her neck is actually a genetic condition she has. She was born with it, her feet. So when she walks, her big toes, I said, how are you? I said, do you have any problems with shin splints? She goes, when I was, for the first few years of my life, she said, when I was walking, I was pigeon-toed. And the whole thing comes together. So we look at the whole person, the fact that she has an abnormal extension of her big toe, which is a genetic thing which can be corrected with orthotics, was actually causing the compression in her neck, which caused the abnormal posture and ultimately the pain in the middle of her back.
And that takes you right back to listening and then healing. So listen there and take a look what's going on. We are going to take
and ask the right questions.
That's what you've got to do for sure. We'll take a final break here on Ask the Experts. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up. We're going to give Dr. Muna a chance to just give us kind of the Coles Notes version, maybe, of all the things we've talked about today. But we do want to spend some time, and we'll talk. We'll touch on a few other things as well, too. Stay with us here on City News 570.
You're listening to City News 570.
Time for more Ask the Experts with Brock Greenhalgh.
Welcome back. We've been fortunate enough today to talk with Dr. Muna from Advanced Pain Relief. Listeners, if you're interested in any of the information we discussed today, please reach out to Dr. Muna. You can call 519-885-3500. You can visit in person, Unit 204-385 Fairway Road South here in Kitchener, or check them out online at advancedpainrelief.ca. So, Dr. Muna, maybe you could recap by going over the process of what happens in a herniated disc patient from the time they see you, what you're thinking, what you're looking for, and how do you help them correct that problem and get that pain relief and get them back to living their best life?
Love it. No, that sounds great. So I like using lower backs for examples because I think most people can have heard of someone who has, sciatic nerve pain.
Right.
So the sciatic nerve is a nerve that comes out of the lower part of the spine. So we talk about nerve roots coming together to create a nerve. So we talked about how there's five vertebrae in your lower back. Out of a number of those segments will come little nerve roots, which will join together. Actually, first they'll split. Some will come down the back of the leg. Some will come down the front. The ones that rejoin and come down the back are called is called your sciatic nerve. When it rejoins and comes down the front, it's called your femoral nerve.
Okay.
So if you pinch a nerve root or a spinal nerve that is feeding your sciatic nerve, you're going to get pain in your leg. Many patients who have sciatica or a pinch to their sciatic nerve or inflammation in the sciatic nerve don't have back pain. Even though the problem's coming from their back, many patients have no back pain. It's all leg pain. So when someone comes in with a herniated disc, first we want to see if they've had advanced imaging already. A lot of patients, by the time they come to us, they have. But again, many don't. So we'll do some focused neurologic work to confirm the level of the lesion or where the problem is. Probably send them for some digital imaging to see what their alignment is, see if there's any other. X-rays tell stories. If you know how to read an X-ray for a story, you can tell what this patient's been through a little bit, or their postural alterations might be work-related, activity-dependent accidents. They may have had a short leg, fractured segment, whatever. It tells you a great story. So when we understand, first we want to get them out of pain as quickly as possible. Using some laser therapy can be very helpful for that. Then we want to start fixing the underlying issue that caused them to herniate the disc. Most of the time, it's not an isolated incident. It's a combination of things over time. So we want to correct that. Sometimes that's body work, massage, chiropractic work, special physio exercises. If the nerve's been pinched long enough that the tissue texture has changed or the muscles in the back have changed because they've had this abnormal work environment or posture, we might do some therapy to break the tension up in those tissues. Muscles, if you put stress on them too long, they'll start to create these calcium cross linkages, and you can develop something called myofascial pain. So we might do some shockwave therapy to break that myofascial pain, restore the motion, restore the movement. If the disc is heavily still quite herniated or degenerative, which means it's lost a lot of the juice, we'll try something called spinal decompression. And if that helps, then we'll do a series of spinal decompression treatments and maybe put on a spinal decompression belt. About 85% of the patients we see have some kind of gait abnormality,
okay,
meaning something in their walking is causing an abnormal stress profile in their back. So a number of our patients, certainly not 85% of them, but a number of our patients would get orthotics for their shoes, right, to create a better foundation for their spine, to initiate and integrate better movement patterns as part of the long-term solution for their back. So if you come in, first thing we're going to do is we're going to chat. We're going to figure out where the problem is, why you have that problem. Then we're going to examine you and confirm that's a problem, probably send you for some imaging,
right,
just so we don't have any surprises. I don't like those kind of surprises. And then we're going to do things first to get you out of pain, and then we're going to do corrective things to help you continue to get out of pain, but then create an environment where hopefully everything goes well, does 90%+ of the time over about 6 to 8 weeks, and then do things to help create long-term solutions so this doesn't happen again.
So you mentioned that 6 to 8 weeks, but you still want, there should be that sort of regular maintenance, I would think, as well, too, right? Once that 6 to 8 weeks has gone by, you'd love to see these people come in and see, stop in for a visit again and just kind of check in with you, or how would those things kind of unfold?
Yeah, you know, some people need some periodic care. Some people need some maintenance care. A lot of our patients, as I mentioned, you know, we get about 15-20 physician referrals a week, plus we have patients who come in because they hear us talking on the radio. So we get a lot of new patient flow. Most of our work, pardon the expression, is treat and release, right, or catch,
right,
and release.
Right.
We fix our patients up, and many of them we don't see again until they have another problem. But some of them we do encourage to continue care. If they're very, very degenerative segments or there's a lot of degeneration, then they might need to come see us every 3 or 4 weeks for one thing or another. No, that's a great point.
And you had mentioned this too, Dr. Muna. You've been at this for 25 years. And I just listening to you talk, I can tell that you're a lifelong learner. Are there things that you do today that are, you know, would have been considered radical or brand new back 25 years ago that today are just like, hey, these are the things we do and we know that they work?
100%. That's a great point. So after chiropractic, so actually as I was finishing chiropractic school, I started doing a functional neurology program.
Okay.
And, you know, some of the things we were doing back then for patients with concussions, you remember, we didn't even talk about concussions
not at all
25 years ago, right? But we were talking about cognitive changes because of, you know, postural imbalance can cause cognitive changes. So we were doing things back then, you know, that were on the edge, cutting edge, certainly had some good research foundation or we wouldn't do it. But now everybody's doing it.
Right.
Now it's totally assumed that that's how it's done. The head of our neurology program is a fellow named Ted Carrick. He was the one, if you remember, rehab Sid Crosby after that, his concussion, and he was off the ice for quite some time.
That's right.
It was a functional problem that he had with his concussion, and Dr. Carrick did an accelerated, to put him in a gyrostim and accelerated a certain canal in one of his in his vestibular system to create a neurologic event and got him back on the ice. So, you know, corrective pain relief, corrective neurology, corrective pain relief is our flavor, right? We want to understand our patients, find the problem, and then use all the tools that are available to us. Sometimes I send patients out because they need something we don't offer, right? It's all about getting the highest standard of care for the patient. We're not opposed to surgery. Our goal is to fix the problem so patients don't need surgery. We have numbers of patients every year who end up canceling a knee surgery because we put them on our regenerative knee program, or they cancel the surgical consult because their back and leg pain goes away. Sometimes we need surgery, and I'll be the first one to, you know, shoot a patient straight and say, hey, we can help you with the pain while you're waiting for surgery, but ultimately you're going to get this, you're going to do better with that. But thank goodness that's 1% of the time,
right,
and most of the time we can help these patients using the technological advancements and the experience we've had.
Dr. Muna, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Your knowledge...
The pleasure has been mine.
You can tell the content, your passion
thank
for helping
you.
Individuals... living a more pain-free life, clearly evident. I look forward to speaking with you again. I hope you're going to be on the show again.
Thank you. I'm sure we'll be talking again. Thank you so much for everything.
Thank you. That was Dr. Muna of Advanced Pain Relief Clinic. First they listen, then they heal. A big thank you to Jordan Malcolm, our technical producer. And thanks to you, the listeners, for joining us. You've been listening to Ask the Experts here on City News 570.